Now, we're going to start with the TAC API. I want to be very clear here because this is something that confuses some people. Some people are like, a TAC API, they go out and they look and they're like, hey, this isn't a cool framework like Beef. And the answer is, you're right, it's not. A TAC API is a collection of attacks that you can then leverage in your attack. It is focused on providing pieces to use, not delivery of the attack. When we talk about Beef next, right, we have an entire controller that we can use. The controller has the zombies reporting into it. We can then send commands down. And a lot of people expect Attack API to be the same way. It's not. It literally is a version control server that you can check out of, and it has a whole bunch of pieces. That's it, right? Those pieces have been around for a while. GNU Citizen releases them. I don't believe they're regularly adding new attacks anymore, but they are maintaining the project and maintaining the existing attacks. They're just not doing a lot of research on new attacks, right? They're allowing projects like Beef to do that. And there are lots of different pieces. Let's talk about some of them, right? So we've got the extension scanner. This is a file, an attack, that will actually determine what Firefox extensions your browser has installed. Why? Well, different users use different types of users use different types of extensions, right? If you've got a collection of extensions that are focused on web development, then maybe you're a web developer. You have a bunch of extensions that do things like network scanning and stuff like that, you're probably a network admin. We can start trying to fingerprint our users that way. Plus, there have been a number of extensions that have had exploits for them. The extension itself is vulnerable. If we find out you're running that, we can attack you, right? It becomes a way into your system. We also have the history dumper. That's actually the screenshot we had earlier, was the history dumper from Attack API. It allows us to find out what pages you've browsed to, what things you've been looking at, right? And as we talked about earlier, it uses an iframe. That iframe has a whole bunch of links in it. And then we just programmatically determine what the links have been visited, right? Very important thing to understand, and I said it earlier, I want to repeat it because it's important. People misunderstand this. It is not retrieving a list of URLs and then parsing it. It is literally just saying to the browser, how do I display this link, right? It is a brute force attack, okay? A lot of people think that it can just open up the browser and give you a list back to the attacker of everything the person browsed. Can't do that. We also have our authentication force attack, which will go against basic and digest and actually try to brute force the credentials, which is kind of nice, right? If we find that we've got like a router or something like that that's using basic or digest, we can use this to go after that. We have the network sweeper, which will go through and map out all of the hosts, and then we can combine that with the results of the port scanner to find out what ports those hosts have listening, right? So two different attacks there. One gives us a map of the network, and one gives us a map of what each host on the network is running, right? We also have our URL scanner and fetcher. Now, the scanner says whether the URL exists. The fetcher actually retrieves the contents from the response and sends it to you. So here's why there's two different things there. If I inject a XSS attack using this into www.sans.org, right? But I want to find out if there's a URL at amazon.com. I can only use the scanner. Because remember, same origin policy would prevent the code I've injected into sans.org from retrieving the content in the response from amazon.com. So the scanner will just say, hey, did that page load? I don't know what the page loaded, but did it load? Right? So the page does exist. The fetcher would allow me to retrieve pages from sans.org in this example. Right? Because I've injected into sans.org, I can retrieve from sans.org. Well, why would I want to do that? Well, I'm retrieving as the user I've injected into their session, right? So if I injected into, let's say, Brian Corcoran, you know, the webmaster, I injected into his browser, well, I'm sure he has some form of elevated privilege in the sans.org website, right? So now I can get access to pages I don't have access to, but he does. Make sense? So that's the difference between the fetcher and the scanner. right? Attack API does provide a bidirectional channel functionality. It's called channel.php, and it is disabled by default. It's using a .ht access file, right? But if you remove that, it's enabled. Now, it is not, and like I said, we're going to play with Beef in a second, it's not as fully functional as Beef, but it does provide a channel that these attacks can report back to the attacker and say, hey, here's the URLs we retrieved, or here's the port scan results, or whatever, right? But this is really there as a proof of concept, because the tool set, the Attack API, is not designed toward delivery. It's just designed toward providing attack pieces, right? If you want to do that, your choice is Beef. Beef. That's what's for dinner, right? Beef is beautiful. It's been out for a few years now. As a matter of fact, when it was originally released, it was in PHP. It's been ported to Ruby. The Ruby version is amazingly more powerful. It has way more plugins, way more fully functional feature set, and downright goodness, right? It's a lot of fun. Now, I want to tell you right now, I want to warn you right now, that this is the section of the class that scares a lot of people. I like that. The attack, Beef attack, the hook, which we'll talk about in a second, this is what controls the zombie, this is what connects the zombie back to the attacker. There is not a single anti-malware, anti-spyware, anti-virus, anti-anything that detects this. Your proxies don't stop it. Your web app firewalls don't even notice it if it's injected correctly, right? I don't know of a single control currently that if I have control of a browser, that you'll detect I have control of it. Java, if you're running a product like Trusteer, now I have not tested this inside of a Trusteerized browser, right? But the Trusteer browser still runs JavaScript, right? This just executes JavaScript. Trusteer is designed, my understanding, and I'm not a salesperson for Trusteer, nor do I run it, right? I know I've got some clients that use it, and I've looked at it before for them. My understanding of it is that it's designed to prevent malware from drive-by downloads and things like that. So if I browse to a website and it dumps malware down, I reset my browser and it's gone. This is JavaScript running within the browser session, and as such will work within a Trusteer environment. Now, some of the attacks won't. Like when we redirect over to Metasploit, Metasploit then falls into the normal exploit management. Trusteer reset gets rid of that. Remember that a Beef hook, all you do is close your browser and it's gone. Right? So as far as I know, if I can inject this into the application, a Trusteer browser won't block this. But like I said, I've not tested that. So I'd love, if anybody's running Trusteer and would like to work with me to test it, I'd be willing to do that. If the browser supports JavaScript, this works. I don't know of a single browser that supports JavaScript that Beef doesn't run in. You may not have all of the functionality, which we'll get to in a second. Links. You asked what browser doesn't support JavaScript. I gave you a browser. Right? I'm just saying. I've browsed many a website using links. Yeah, quite often. It is a command line utility. Nice. So your question of it, can you detect if you're attacked being an intelligent user? First, I'd like you to point out an intelligent user to me. Second, the thing is that what it does, let's talk about how it hooks before we get into describing why we can't detect it, okay? So basically the idea is we have a controller. This is the controller, right? And it's a web interface. On this side, we have our hooked browsers. Some of them are offline, online. An offline browser is one that's not reporting into the controller currently, right? So it does keep track of, hey, it's you again. I remember you. And I've got some fun stuff to do this time, right? That's the one side. Then we have a list of the modules. Notice the different colors, right? So it actually, if you've selected a zombie, one of the browser victims, it actually attempts to determine if that module will work inside that browser, right? So, hey, here's an IE browser. Oh, yeah, this works fine, right? That's green. Or it'll say it works, but the user may see it, right? Like a pop-up, obviously, that one, the user's going to see that. But some of the other exploits, the user will see a redirection or something like that, right? So it's not as subtle. So if you're trying to be subtle, don't run the orange ones. The white means it's not confirmed to work, but it's also not confirmed not to work. I think I said that right. Right? And then, of course, the red is, hey, we know for a fact this browser doesn't support this particular function. Right? And it tries to do that. Now, of course, you can still run the red ones against the browser. It just isn't really productive. Then, as you select them, you've got other tabs that contain the configuration of that module or the results from that module. You've got the logs, so you see what happens. And I mean, this entire interface is kind of nice, right? How do we control the browser? How do we control that zombie? Well, it's pretty simple. This is the string we inject, right? In its simplest form. Obviously, your only goal is to load that hook.js file, right? So if you can get that hook.js file to load, we've hooked the browser. For example, I released code at ShmooCon a few years ago that was a Firefox extension called Zombify My Browser, and it had the beef hook in the extension. So every single time you loaded your browser reported back to me and gave me control of your machine. That extension bypassed the Mozilla checks, and they published it. I'm just saying. Right, that script is being loaded from Beef Controller. The Beef Controller basically sends different content to that script based on what commands we want to have run, and this browser automatically reloads that script every few seconds. Right, that's how we communicate to the victim. That's the piece that you have to detect. Right, like lots of antivirus tools. Download a copy of Beef. Your antivirus will go crazy. Ah, there's a Beef controller on your machine. Well, okay, but it doesn't detect the hook. The hook is what's going down to the victim, right? That hook is in your cache, so we could look in cache for remnants, but all they are remnants of JavaScript, right? How many remnants of JavaScript are in your browser cache? Lots. Oh, we can change the name of the file. Of course we can hide that. Yeah. If you've got the controller, right, the controller alerts lots of antivirus, but if you've got the controller in your machine, either you're the one that's using it or somebody has compromised you way beyond Beef. Yeah, I mean, you know. So, we can use various modules against them, or we can just redirect them entirely to a Metasploit server, and then use all the exploits that are built into Metasploit, right? What are some of the functionalities we can do? Which will answer your question of what's the most diabolical thing. So right off the bat, we have lots of different modules. And oh, by the way, new modules come out every day, right? Yes, sir. Source IP address. You have the IP address. The question is, how do I control multiple zombies at once? Yeah, it doesn't drop a file. It doesn't. There is no hook.js file sitting on the file system. There's a Ruby process running that when the connection comes in, it says, oh, which zombie are you? Oh, here's the contents of hook.js for you. Yeah. What do you mean request policy will block the hook? So request, so it's similar to NoScript. How many people here are running request policy extension for Firefox? Okay, so I'm not worried about it yet. So it would allow the user to say, don't connect to that Beef server. So the user could say, don't load that. But what you're describing is if I run it from an RU server. How about if I run it from Facebook? You don't think your bank has a Facebook link on it? Your bank doesn't say, I like us on Facebook on their front page? Because mine does. I'm just saying, right? You're right. So if you block the connection back to the beef server, yeah, absolutely, it blocks this. Cool. I'm sorry. Request policy is an extension, but you have to know to block the connection. You were saying, wait a minute, he was saying. Oh, yeah, if I get the initial script down, I can still run stuff. Your question? You're about to ask me my favorite question. I knew it. So what about no script? Thank you, sir. Does anybody have a soapbox? How many people here run no script? How many people here run no script knowing it's written by a malicious developer who has already backdoored it at least 2 times? What? At least twice, right? So it's funny how many hands went down. Oh yeah, you wanna see a picture of my kids? Here, here's Brennan and Sarah. They came in and hugged me earlier. There you go. Oh, if you're in my target scope, I am, right? So let me ask you another question. How many people here who run NoScript whitelist any domain? Not that you whitelist all domains, but that you have any single domain whitelisted. Yep, you lose. All I have to do is find an injection point on that site, and I win. Now let me ask the next question. For the people who run NoScript, do you vet every single script before you allow it to run? Do you look through all of the JavaScript before you say, yes, allow this to run? Okay, so if none of those things are true, if you don't vet every single script and you whitelist any domain, right, then in my opinion, the benefit of NoScript does not outweigh the malicious behavior of the developer previously. If you didn't do that, if you were vetting the scripts and you weren't whitelisting, like Justin Searle, he uses NoScript, I can't blame him. He doesn't whitelist anything and he vets every script he allows to run. At that point, he's gotten more protection out of the tool than the maliciousness was worth. It's okay to run it. NoScript will block beef if you haven't whitelisted the site and you don't allow the script to run. I don't run NoScript. I don't trust the developer. So I can't give you any instructions on how to run it. Sorry. I'm absolutely vulnerable to this. Do you know how many other things I'm vulnerable to? I drive on Blanding Boulevard. Blanding Boulevard is a road that engineering students actually use as an example of horrible city design. We had a guy who was visiting my house. The TV was on. The commercial played about, come on down, see us at Blanding Boulevard. And he bust out laughing and said, oh my gosh, Blanding Boulevard's a real road? Because it was the example his college used about what not to do. So you want to talk about risk, let's talk about Blanding, right? Beef is the least of my concerns. So there's lots of different modules. We can do things like steal the items in your clipboard. If you're running IE before 7, it doesn't ask the user. It just takes the clipboard, sends it to me. How many people here work for an organization that have a computer awareness policy that says, hey, for sensitive passwords, put them in a text file and then cut and paste them so keyloggers won't steal them? By the way, if you're running IE after 7, it just asks the user if it's okay. Says the user, hey, this script would like access to your clipboard. Is that okay? Yeah. What the heck? No problem. Right? I'm sorry? Yeah, exactly. That is the question. What's my clipboard? Yeah, no problem. That's fine. I don't know what it is. It can't hurt me. Ignorance is bliss. History browsing, just like the Attack API one, right? We can find out if you visited a website. We do have to give it a list. We can actually do a request initiation. Have it make web requests for us, right? Kind of nice. Port scanning. It's got a cool enough port scanner that it distributes it across zombies. So if you have an organization that I've hooked, let's say 100 people inside your organization, I can select all 100 of them and say port scan this network, and it will distribute the port scan across the 100 zombies to make it less likely you'll notice. Isn't that cool? I mean, this is it's beautiful, right? Then we've got browser exploitation, kind of nice. It's got some built-in exploits that'll dump down, or it actually integrates with Metasploit, so as Metasploit gets new browser exploits, Beef does too, right? I'm sorry? It's absolutely open source. It's beautiful, great project team. They're amazingly responsive. Plus, it'll allow you to auto-pwn the browser. Anybody here looked at auto-pwn? It's a feature of Metasploit. Basically, you say, here's my browser, send every single exploit until you get a shell, right? And basically, Metasploit vomits attacks at your browser. I don't recommend it in a pen test, because you will stomp all over a machine. But as a demo, it's fun, right? Just tie right in, done. We can also do, yes? If it's in scope. So the question is, do I do all of this if I've hooked a browser, do I do all of these attacks if I'm just doing a web pen test? Probably not, because if it's just a web pen test, I'll use these as examples of why that cross-site scripting flaw is bad. But if it's a web pen test where I'm allowed to pivot, or I'm allowed to hook the browser and then access the site as them, yes, absolutely, I'll do this, right? Plus, we can do inter-protocol exploitation. This is where we start to get into that what's the most diabolical thing I've ever seen. So the idea here is most protocols are forgiving, right? The protocol, as long as part of the packet contains what it's expecting, it'll ignore the rest of the junk. So you can actually format a correctly formatted packet for this service, let's say IMAP, and make it the payload for a post. It will post an HTTP post to the IMAP server. The IMAP server will ignore the HTTP header and act on the IMAP protocol packet in the payload. So I can communicate cross-protocol via JavaScript injected into your browser. Now, if I can communicate that way, why not just deliver an exploit, right? I can do that. As a matter of fact, Beef has a bind shell built into it, right? Kind of nice. Here's some diagrams of this, right? Step one, I inject into the web app. Step two, the user accesses it, I hook the browser. The browser reports into the controller, and the attacker accesses the Beef controller. The screenshots here are using the PHP version, because at the time that we did these slides, the Ruby version did not have the asterisk module ported yet. Okay? My understanding is it's being worked on right now. So that's the module we were using. So we see this. This is the controller. There's the zombie. I want to go and attack an Asterisk server. Asterisk is an open source PBX. How many of you work in organizations where we don't patch those internal servers because we don't want to break anything? And really, who can get access to them except for our users anyways, right? Yeah, oh yeah, us. VoIP, oh, I love VoIP. Oh, nobody patches VoIP at all. Well, right, it's just voice. What are they going to do, speak the payload? Hex 90, hex 90, hex 90, hex 90, hex 41. Right? It is possible, but we won't get into that right now, right? especially with HTML5 and its voice recognition and its ability to play sound, we can actually yell commands and then have other computers hear them and act on them. A Siri-based worm. But, so we then tell it to exploit that Asterisk server, right? You never thought about that, did you? I'm working on it. But we tell it to exploit. So now we've got an exploit against that internal server, step 6, right? Step 5 is where we told it to do it. And now we can actually use shell commands. We come in here and we say id ls slash pwd, present working directory, cat etsy password, cat etsy shadow, exit. Yes, asterisk run it says root, so we just got access to your password and shadow files on your asterisk server. Can anybody else say win? That's delivered via JavaScript, hooked through cross-site scripting into a browser onto your internal network. Right? Isn't that fun? I mean, it's just a blast. So we're going to do an exercise now. You guys are going to play with Beef, right? We're going to launch it, play around with it there, use the history browsing, wander around. Oh, by the way, you might notice there's a keystroke logger in Beef. It logs all of the keystrokes that the browser user is typing. So again, no problem there, right? We can deliver a different key logger, but the one that's built in is written in JavaScript and only in the browser. Yep. There are persistence modes. So the question is, if they leave the web page, does it keep working? There are persistent modules where they'll launch other pop-under windows, they'll iframe the page, they'll install a Firefox extension to keep control of that browser. But by default, if I don't do any of the persistent modules, if you leave the page or close the browser, Beef's gone. It's one of the reasons, right, and that's why we like it. It's because we can do it as a demonstration, and the user doesn't have to reformat their, you know, like, if I dump malware on a client's machine to show them a demonstration, they have to slick that machine, rebuild it, format it, everything else. With Beef, all they gotta do is, as long as I haven't done the persistence, all they have to do is close the browser and I'm gone. Yes. Yeah. So, play around with this, and then we'll pick up with limit. Beef. It's a fun little tool, isn't it? You ever want to find some fun? Go out and Google search the hook. You'll find lots of sites that talk about it. You'll find even more sites that have been persistently attacked with it. Sites like radio stations that are hooking every single person that comes there. Churches, I've found. Storefronts, just all kinds of cool stuff. I've not yet found a SCADA control system that's hooking people, but I'm hoping. I mean, if you... you're about to say that SCADA control systems shouldn't be on the internet. Please. I actually did a pen test of a head end for a smart grid system, and when we found a vulnerability, and I said, you know, since this thing is on the internet, this is pretty bad. And they're like, but this would never be on the internet. I'm like, well, then how do you expect people to get to the mobile interface? And they're like, there's no mobile interface on our head end. It's like, yeah, actually there is. And we're on the conference call and the developer says, yeah, I built one. So the developer thought it'd be interesting to have a mobile interface and actually built a mobile interface to a smart grid head end. Yeah, I mean, go out to the iTunes App Store. There are SCADA control apps and smart grid control apps in the Apple App Store. I'm sorry, but I don't want my smart grid on my phone, right? Let's talk about the MRI Viewer app from Siemens that will connect to the medical equipment server that is on the internet and let you see all of the imaging of the, I guess, victim at that point, but patient is what the hospital would have called them. All of their medical imaging, like 3D imaging that you can rotate and see their insides, right? It's like TSA on steroids. I don't know, you know, what? Did you say it prevents the attack? That's the attack, nice. It's crazy what people will web enable. I mean, do you know that there are coffee machines that have web servers on them? A coffee machine. I know. Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. Vending machines, coffee machines. I was going to say refrigerators. Why does my refrigerator need a web server? Yeah. Right, but why does it need a web server to order anything? It needs to be a web client at that point. But it still has a web server for you to control it, right? What about, have you guys seen the new ad for the, have you driven away from your house and then not realized if your garage door was closed? Here's a cloud-based shut my damn garage door opener. It's web-based. Web-based. No, it's Craftsman. Right, it's Craftsman. So it's guaranteed for life to allow me to open your garage door. I mean, it's just sick, the stuff that's out there. And they're all like, woohoo! Anybody looked at Nest? The thermometer. What's thermostat? Thank you. The thermostat that's digitally controlled, it's got a web server in it. Your house is going to be as hot as this room. I'm sorry? Not yet. Yes. That's beautiful. I'm perfectly okay with web servers built in MPEGs. Personally, I believe that every single device should have a web server on it for me. I've actually talked to vendors about them embedding my IP address into their system just as an allowed IP. You might as well. I'm going to get in anyways, right? It's like the agreement. When I used to work in Guardians, Mike Poore and I had an agreement. He would click any link I sent him as long as... No. We agreed to this, right? He would click the link as long as I agreed that before I sent it, I would think he signs my paychecks. Okay. He signs my paycheck. Click, click. And he would test stuff out for me, right? No problem. Except Josh Wright had to get involved. And he says to Mike, Mike, that's not going to work. And Mike's like, why not? He's like, you don't sign Kevin's paycheck. And Mike's like, yeah, I know I don't sign it. It's a, you know, it's a, we do paychecks and, you know, we use their service. And Josh is like, yeah, but Mike, paychecks uses a web interface. Right? I don't know if he's right. I mean, I know they use a web interface. It's an interesting one. I didn't say it was a bad one. I want to be very clear here. I have not tested the paychecks interface. Right? I'd love to. Right. But I've not done it. So, yes, sir. I'm sorry? Oh, of course. We're embedding web servers into everything. Pacemakers with a web server in it. I mean, come on, why not? Heck, you know, let's just put a web server in our dog. Well, I mean, whatever, that's fine. Yeah, they are chipped, right? Mobile access point. Where is DOG? That was my dog's name when I was a kid. DOG. The vet asked us how to spell it. D-O-G. He didn't think it was funny. Better than my other dog I named Gag. Because he did all the time. Web-enabled cow. Oh, don't even get me started on cows. Web-enabled the cow. Why don't we just inject a beef hook? But, yum. So one of the things we want to talk about, we'll talk about this pretty quickly and then we'll move into session, is limiting our attacks. Because while it's all fun and good to say, own the world, the reality is that we have a scope. Damn ethics. Right? Oh, so unfair. Do you know how much easier my pen test would be if I could just own everybody now? We'd like you to do a pen test. Okay, here's your report. Wait, yeah, we haven't told you. Wait, we're not oh, it doesn't matter. I already have control. The world would run so much better if I controlled. I just want that known. Like, for the record, the world would run better if I controlled it. You know? Is that a good law? No, get rid of it. Kevin says. Might not be the most fair world. Right? I will admit to being mean. I've always found things to be. I have joked around with people and said, you know, I could never be a cop. You give the police officer a gun, a stick, tell him to use it only when necessary. That might be, but I think necessary would be way more often than. Because I honestly believe, I told you guys, right? I believe in security through pain. If you click the link, I slap you in the back of the head. Right? Why not? You wouldn't click the link again, would you? You wouldn't. I know you wouldn't, right? You do something security dumb, I whack you in the back of the head, you'd be like, ow, okay, I won't do that again. But I know, I can tell by looking in your face. You know a guy at work that would click that link over and over and over again until my hand was bloody, right? But wouldn't you feel better working out your frustrations? Whack, oh, I feel better already, right? But we gotta limit our targets. We gotta limit who we're attacking, because sadly, I'm not in charge, right? And there's various ways we want to do this to add intelligence to whether or not we deliver the attack, right?